Welcome back to Compounding Happiness, a podcast that takes a genuine and sometimes difficult approach to exploring new ways of thinking, feeling, and acting. Everyone wants to experience more happiness in their life. Let's discover the answers through discussion and curiosity. I am so incredibly excited to release this episode. I've had it done for the last 6 weeks, and it has been so hard to sit on it because this was one of my favorite episodes. It was just a ton of fun. I sat down with Chef Emily Hirsch, aka the self-help plant-based chef out of San Antonio, Texas, and contestant on the most recent season of Hell's Kitchen. You guys know me. You know that I watch Gordon Ramsay's shows religiously. So when I saw Emily on Hell's Kitchen, I was immediately blown away by her ability to maintain joy, optimism, and peace throughout one of the most rigorous culinary experiences possible. So I reached out to Emily, and she graciously accepted my invitation to come on the show. So in this episode, I pick Emily's brain on how to maintain a sense of composure and optimism in extremely stressful environments, and she and I also do a deep dive on what it was like being mentored by Gordon Ramsay. I've always been fascinated with people who are world-renowned or the elite of the elite of the elite, and Gordon embodies all of that. So what were some of the lessons and takeaways that she experienced learning from someone as talented as Gordon Ramsay? We also discuss the topics of losing happiness and ways to rediscover it, the importance of food as a personal development tool, body positivity, self-image, diet culture, and lastly, how to set yourself up to win regardless of what the outcome is, being proud of your struggles and setting yourself up for success no matter what. Let's jump into it. Emily, welcome to the show. I'm stoked to have you. I know it's been a few months in the making because we have some crazy schedules. So thanks for carving out an hour to sit and chat with me.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm really excited to be chatting with you, and I think it's going to be a great conversation about health and wellness and mental health and all the fun things.
I love it. One thing that I immediately just noticed as you and I were talking, neither of us have stopped smiling since we started this call.
Yeah, I feel like we're very smiley people, both of us. So.
We very much are.
It's nice to find another smiley person.
Right. Right. And that's okay. That's a perfect segue. So I saw you on the most recent season of Hell's Kitchen, and that show is notorious for breaking people down. You know, it seems like there's always someone on there who's just a jerk, or they're super rude, or they put people down. And you had the totally opposite approach, which immediately resonated, where here you are in this extremely stressful, intense, just balls to the wall environment, and you were smiling, you were hugging people, you were laughing, and you maintained just this sense of optimism and hope, and just you seem to just enjoy being there. So I'm curious, have you always been that way, or how did you develop some of those skills to maintain sense of love and joy and peace even in extremely stressful situations?
Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you for noticing that. That means a lot that you can see kind of through the movie magic and see, you know, really acting. And I think Hell's Kitchen did a good job about portraying us pretty correctly. And for your question of if I've always been that way, I think I've naturally been a happy person. But there have been times in my life where I've lost it, and I've kind of lost the natural joy that we kind of have as kids. Everybody has that when you're born. Everybody has that natural joy of life and optimism. There was a time in my life where I have lost it. And because of that, I look back on that now and I'm incredibly thankful for it, because it's made me see a picture and it's made me realize that struggle and failure is something that is part of life, and it's something that you should strive towards, because that's how you can find happiness and that's how you can enjoy something so amazing as being on a television show and seeing the bigger picture of it all, not just, oh my God, he's screaming at me right now, this is terrible.
Yeah, I can imagine one of the most intimidating things that could ever happen to someone is having Gordon Ramsay in your face yelling at you, asking where his food is. Like, tell me, okay, so let's expand on that. So I've been a huge fan of the show. Mm-hmm. What was it like being mentored by, like,
someone as world class as Gordon Ramsay. What was that like?
One word that I always say is life changing. It's something that I always think back on whenever I'm struggling with my career or personal life or something. I always think back on what I learned, and even the things that he didn't say, his presence and his willingness to teach us. And that experience was just so life-changing that I always think of it as a second culinary school or boot camp or something that is just very, very fundamental for everything else that happened after. So it was life-changing, and it was also really cool to see him show that softer side to us.
Yes.
Because there are times where, yes, he screamed in your face, and yes, he threw chickens at you and all of that kind of stuff. There are also times where you remember that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But there are also times where he took us to his office and he really, really saw our strengths and our weaknesses, and he wanted to talk to us about it, and he wanted us to progress. And being able to experience that from somebody who's been so successful in their career, in their life, just is something that I always hold with me. And it's always something that keeps me going in my career. So it was such an amazing experience, and something that I'm very lucky to have experienced, because I know a lot of people can't say that they've worked with one of the best chefs in the world. So it was just mind blowing.
One thing that you just touched on that I think is the separating factor with successful people and extremely successful people is they have an energy about them, and they're able to bring out the best in other people. Where, yes, one thing that I've noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong, is Gordon Ramsay is for sure a hard ass. He has high standards and expectations, but he also sees your potential and he's willing to work with you. He wants you, he sees you here, and he goes, I know you can be here, so let's just take that leap. And what I've noticed in my personal life, people that I really look up to and respect, is they have this ability to bring out a higher self in someone that they didn't even know they possessed. So in your experience, would you say that that's accurate with him mentoring you and all the other chefs?
For sure. And just knowing that, because I've grown up being a dancer, I've grown up playing sports and having lots of coaches. And so I've had a fair share of amazing coaches who have inspired me and made me be a better person. And I've had coaches that and mentors that have, you know, dug me into the ground or made me feel isolated. And so recently, coming out of a coaching experience like that, going from that to Hell's Kitchen and noticeably seeing a difference and noticeably wanting to work hard and wanting to be myself. And I had a long time before Hell's Kitchen where I was struggling to be 100% myself. And I think that was the main thing that I took away from it, was that he allowed us to really just be ourselves and be motivated and work hard and be okay with failure and just keep pushing. And it was that kind of tough love plus positive reinforcement combined together that I was like, this is amazing. I'm thriving. I did not think that I would thrive in Hell's Kitchen, but I really feel like I did because of the mentorship and because of the environment.
And that is the separating factor. That's why of all of the contestants that I could have reached out to on Instagram, I went, no, I want to reach out to Emily, because as people were crumbling, you just seemed to get better and better and like more comfortable in your own skin, more comfortable with your own skills, your experiences. And being in really intense situations, you know, some people rise to the occasion and some people buckle under the pressure. And it was just really cool to see you rise to the occasion. You know, I was on my couch rooting for you. I'm like, let's go, let's go. So it was just a joy to watch you step into a higher version of yourself. And I wanted to acknowledge that in you. Yeah.
That's so sweet and means the world. So thank you for seeing that in me and
of course
making my whole week.
Good, good. Let's take a step back. Where did this love for cooking come from? Because one other thing that I noticed about you, and correct me if this isn't completely accurate, but you seem to use food as a personal development tool, where you use it as this gateway for happiness and love and connection and relationships, community. So where did that love for food come from? And then how have you transitioned, or how have you made food this gateway for all of those other things that I just mentioned?
That's a good question. My love for food has always been with me. I think I had a dad who was a huge foodie, or he still is, but he is more of a barbecue grill master, that kind of foodie. And so we grew up really talking about food together, loving food together. On the other hand, I grew up with a lot of food rules in my house and a lot of importance on body image and diet culture. Mm. And so these two things I've always balanced and always tried to decide which one's more important, which one I can identify with. And I put a lot of importance on both. Mm-hmm. And I think once you get into college, you start to realize that there's things that work in your life and some things that don't work. And so you start to really find yourself. And so being a dancer, I always was very, very passionate about it and took the importance of dance as the forefront and made it up to the collegiate level. And once you get up to the collegiate level is when it gets kind of intense. And so when it got really intense, my coaches started to focus a little bit more on body image. And so that's when I realized that I put a lot of importance to that, because there are some girls who, you know, could do fine with having that body image pressure put on them, and some who couldn't, and I couldn't. And so I ended up kind of losing my love for food and losing my love for enjoying myself and loving my body, and put more importance on the body image and the diet culture. And so through that, I lost myself. I lost my love of dance. I lost being able to be 100% myself. Hmm. And through that, stopped dancing and kind of had a loss of identity. And so when I found food again was when I was also finding my mental health again. And so that's why I like to combine food and mental health, because that's how I found that love, was the combination. And I think food is such a connector to all sorts of things, especially mental health, community, self-love. There's so many amazing things of food that I wasn't seeing. And once I found that, and once I was able to heal myself with the love of cooking, I got so passionate about it. And I was like, I know that I'm not the only one who has struggled with this. Yeah. And I want to be able to be a segue for people through food. And so we can cook and we can talk about things that maybe aren't talked about, or things that young women and men are scared to talk about. And so that's why I love to combine food with mental health and food with self-love and all physical health, holistic health, because I think it's just so important. And I think that it's natural, because food isn't just one thing. A lot of things.
Yes, it is. And there's so many things that I would love to dig into what you said. And one that stuck out to me was you mentioned food affecting young women and young men. And I don't think that not to discredit the women that it affects, but there's so many men, and I've seen it more like gym culture, where it's like, okay, gotta wake up and then have your 6 scoops of protein and then your 7 egg white omelet and then another protein shake and then chicken and rice every day for dinner and broccoli. It's like, man, the relationship that some of those people have with food is clearly distorted, clearly unhealthy, and not where it's supposed to be, just as it is with overeating or anorexia or bulimia. And that really seems to be a segment that is overlooked, because I've noticed in myself when I'm really, really, really restrictive in my diet, if I'm going, okay, I want to gain 10 pounds this month or 10 pounds over the next 3 months, and I really want to hit the gym hard, chances are I'm trying to overcompensate for something else that's going on. It's like, oh, I just went through a breakup. Let me just, yes, exactly.
That struck a chord in me so much. It's food is something that we like. Food is such a coping mechanism, and it's so natural to cope with food because it's comforting, and it's such a comforting thing. And so I noticed that I was coping with food in a negative way because I had an unhealthy relationship with my dance coaches and with body image and self-worth. And I was feeling all of these feelings. And I thought, okay, well, I can control food and I can have a negative mindset or negative, but just have that negative connotation and feel a sense of control.
Yeah.
So that struck a chord with me, what you just said, because usually when we're having these problems, it's not just about food. It's about so many other things.
I listened to a TED Talk the other day, and it was from a few years ago, and one line in it, and I'm not sure I haven't fleshed the idea out all the way, but it resonated enough with me that I've been thinking about it, and it's talking about addiction. And it says that the opposite of addiction is connection. And I started thinking, and how many food and eating disorders, you know, are focused on someone being solo, you know, hiding out in their room, eating, or not going out with friends, avoiding that connection because they don't want it. They can't have the carbs or the calories or the sugars or whatever it is. And it seems like you had that unhealthy relationship with food, and you were able to overcome those unhealthy tendencies through connection, through relationships, both with your love for food and your relationship with food, but also going through experiences, especially at Hell's Kitchen, with other people along the same journey, where you were then, now your experience of food is tied to, I was coached and mentored by Gordon Ramsay. I was with 20 other people trying to make a name for myself. I learned X, Y, or Z. I went through one of the most challenging things in my life. So now when you reflect on food, do you have this feeling of excitement and love and joy and like, holy cow, this is such a powerful thing? Yeah. Is that true for you?
Oh, for sure. I think it's really cool to look back 4 years ago, see how I felt about food, and just look at myself now and see it's such a big part of my life, and it's something that I'll never give up. And it's something that I've been able to touch the world with. And that's my biggest accomplishment, I think. And that's why I love it, is because it's something that's helping others. And that's way more powerful than any other success that I can say of being working with Gordon Ramsay or making the top seven or whatever. You know, that's not why I did the show. And I honestly was not going to do the show at first because I was scared, because I was a baby chef. I had only been cooking for 4 months before I got the call to be on the show. So I was scared. I didn't want to do it. But then I thought what my purpose is. And I just really wanted to get my message out of how I struggled and how I healed and how I want to help heal. And so I think that's why I remained so positive throughout the show, because I was doing it to be a finalist or to be the head chef of the restaurant, which I probably wouldn't be anyways, because I'm a vegetarian. So. But I did it because I wanted to spread love in a platform that I think is, in cooking shows, sometimes it's lack in the message that I wanted to spread. So I wanted to be that voice for young men and women who have struggled with food in a bad way. And that's not really talked about in cooking competition series or cooking shows or anything like that.
There were two great points that you made. And before I get into the second one, I want to start with, you mentioned before you went on Hell's Kitchen, you only had 4 months of cooking experience and you were scared to go on the show. So what shifted? I know you just gave a 30,000 foot overview, but what was the process of getting accepted into Hell's Kitchen and then you making that pivotal moment to go, you know what, I'm going to try this. What was, what led up to that?
So actually reached out to me through LinkedIn, which is such a random way to get
who reached out to you?
One of the producers. So
on LinkedIn, I love it.
Yeah, they're like, "Hey, Emily, auditioning for Hell's Kitchen. Why don't you, like, if you want to audition, send some pictures." And I was like, "This is definitely a scam. Why are you messaging me?"
Block.
And this is some sort of, they're gonna kidnap.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting, and I remember I sent it to my mom, and the process was a long one, so I had a lot of time to really reflect on if I wanted to do it or not. I never really watched Hell's Kitchen before, so I put on the first season, which is the season that he's the most up an ass. And so I was like, oh no, like I just went through a really bad time with coaches in the first place. I can't have him calling me like a fat cow and I don't even know, but he was really, really intense. And so that scared me. And of course, my parents are very protective of me. So they watched it too. And they were like, I don't know, Emily, you're really new. This is something we don't want you to get hurt. And so that was probably the scariest thing, was the inexperience and just the fear of rejection and failure. And when I reached out to my mentors at the time, I was working at a restaurant in New York City. They told me that they didn't think that I could do it either. And so it was a lot of pushback that I had to overcome and had to really look within and say, okay, this is a once in a lifetime experience. This is something that maybe I won't have again. This is just, I'm going to take it as a learning lesson and not take it as trying to prove myself. And that's why at the end of the day, I decided to be on the show, because if I would have done it to prove myself as one of the best chefs in one of the best young chefs in America, then I probably would have gotten kicked off because I would have put too much pressure on myself. So it was very much realizing that this is going to be a learning experience. And if I make it the first day and get kicked off the first day, great. If I make it farther, great. And so that's the mindset that I really had to cling to. And then something that is another big lesson that I learned was, it's always really, really good to put yourself in an environment with people who are more experienced than you and better than you at their job. Because I learned so much. And it's just insane, because you have to be vulnerable to do that, to put yourself in that situation. There are a ton of chefs who are executive chefs and had all of these years of experience ahead of me, even as young chefs. And putting myself in that environment just made me stronger. And that's something that I also realized.
Well, you saw, I was grinning ear to ear that entire time you were going through that. And there were several things that you mentioned that immediately resonated with me. One was the fact that before you even took on this insane challenge, you were met with obstacle after obstacle after obstacle of people saying, you can't do this, or you shouldn't do this, or you're not going to succeed, or you're not ready for it. So even before you walked through those doors, you had already gone through hell, so to speak, to even get there. And I think that that's really important that you mentioned that, because I know that I've found myself before of knowing, okay, this is what I want to do. And then having people just go, no, don't do that. Stay small. I know you might get hurt. Whatever it might be, this might be a waste of time. You might lose all your money. But when you have that intuition or that feeling of, I need to try this. And the fact that you had that, you stuck to it. And even though people were saying this isn't a good idea, you followed through on it. That's amazing. So that was the first part. The second, and I think this is the infinitely more powerful piece, is you checked your ego before you went into it, and you set yourself up for it to be a win-win situation. One of my favorite podcasts is Ed Milet interviewing Shaun White, and he's talking to him, and he's going through, what is it like, right before you drop in and you're about to nail your trick? What are your rituals? What do you do right before you run? And he goes, I watch the person before me, and if they go and they absolutely kill it, they get the best run of the day, that gives me permission of, cool, that means I can do it too. And then if they totally mess up, if they just fall right out the gate, he goes, okay, perfect, it's my time to show off now. And that same concept is exactly what you were just saying, of regardless, either way, you are setting yourself up to win. Failure wasn't even an aspect of going on Hell's Kitchen, because just getting there in the first place, you were already winning. And I think that that energy of going in with that really probably served you well. So I love that you mentioned that and talked about it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's such an important lesson to learn. And there's still times that in the present now, I still struggle with that kind of stuff. And you're not, just because you did it once doesn't mean that you're going to be having that mindset the rest of your life. So it's still something that I have to remind myself, that failure is good, that it's not an all or nothing thing. This is something that I just struggled with yesterday thinking about my career. So it's something that you need to constantly remind yourself. It's like training your brain.
Yes.
And if you stop doing that, then you're going to lose sight of how and when you can really succeed, and you can really feel 100% yourself and like you're going for it and you're just really being your best.
Yeah, definitely. Circling back to a few minutes ago when I said there were two points, the other that I thought was really interesting was you saying that of your accomplishments of what you're doing, your love for food and sharing that with other people is infinitely more valuable than, you know, being mentored by Gordon Ramsay or having this TV exposure. So I'm curious, what are you most proud of in your personal life and professional life?
Ooh, that's such a good question. I think personal life, I think I am the most proud of being able to always bring myself back to what I am meant to be doing. I think I have, there are times where you might spread yourself too thin, or there are times where you are trying to people please or give your all to somebody. And I think for me, being able to, I'm still working on this, but being able to center myself and realize that there are things that, I don't know. I just went off on a tangent there.
No, I love it. Keep going.
Yeah, I think that just being able to realize at the end of the day, trying to keep centering myself and learning and growing and being kind to myself, that's it. That's what I'm most proud of myself for. I had to go on a little tangent there. But I think I used to be pretty mean to myself on motivation and trying to reach goals. I would have a negative outlook and a negative reinforcement. And I think now, going through all of this craziness of Hell's Kitchen and eating disorder and all of these obstacles throughout my life and early part of my life, I think that it is cool that I found kindness and self-love and patience. And I think that's what I'm most proud of in my personal life, is that I can, no matter what happens, I can always, at the end of the day, remain kind to myself and believe in myself. And I think that's what I'm most proud of. And then professionally, I'm just really excited to be able to be the spokesperson for plant-based eaters and for eating disorder recovery patients and people, and just being vulnerable in my professional life. I think that's what I'm most proud of. And because it gives people permission to be vulnerable themselves. And so I think that is what I'm most proud of, because I know in social media, I'm very active on social media, and I see that sometimes social media is really fake. Yeah. So I'm trying to be the person who's not going to be fake. I'm trying to be the person who's able to be vulnerable and able to give people permission to also be vulnerable and reach successes like I was able to reach in Hell's Kitchen.
So I have one question on the personal life, one question on the professional that you mentioned. The phrase that you said was you were able to recenter and get grounded again. Mm-hmm. What are some practices, or what are some of the mindsets or tools that you've adopted in your life to recenter? Because I know for myself and a lot of people listening, we've all been in that position. Excuse me, position where we're spiraling out of control and we just can't seem to, you know, get our feet planted. So what have you done to get back to center?
Yeah, I think a big, big one is exercise. Exercise is, I lose it too sometimes. So that's what I talk about, is recentering. And I think because we're human, we all kind of lose sight of if we're being consistent with something, or if we're just down in the dumps, or if we're feeling depressed. I'm always able to come back and realize what makes me feel like I'm the best and how I can be the best. And exercise is huge for my mental health, especially looking back in the past and seeing how I used exercise before, which was for body image, and seeing the difference. My mental health was plummeting when I was using exercise for a negative way. But now that I'm using exercise for a positive way, It's something that makes me feel amazing, even if it's just going for a walk, cycling, doing weights, anything that increases my endorphins is something that really helps me get back on track, helps me feel like my biggest self. Another one is meditation, of course.
Yep.
I love meditation. When I was struggling with an eating disorder in college, I would walk to my classes and I would do a walking meditation. And that is a big, big factor of my recovery was meditation and just being consistent with it. And so I love that you can meditate in all which sort of way. You can meditate while walking, you can meditate while taking a bath, you can meditate while eating. So that's what I would try to do. And so those two things are big ones for me, and they always help me recenter.
Hmm. You hit on something really big there. And I think what I really benefited from with you sharing that was taking a moment, combining the meditation and then also reflecting on when do you feel your best? You know, that's something that I don't ask myself enough. If I've had a really good day, sometimes I just go, yeah, today was great. But if I stop and intentionally reflect and go, okay, why was it great? Oh, chances are I usually had a really tough workout, or I got uncomfortable really early on in the day and I pushed myself, or I went for a longer walk than usual, or I wasn't on my phone for a certain amount of time. And I think the practice of really reflecting on at what point in my day did I feel the best? And what was I doing? Because then you can replicate that. And then when you get consistent at that replication process, before you know it, you're kind of unstoppable. And whatever happens externally doesn't really matter. And then the meditation part of just walking or eating, it's setting that intention of I'm doing something good for myself and I'm going to reflect. So you can just sit in silence. You know, you can combine everyone listening, what Emily just said, of figuring out what it is that puts you in that peak state or that optimal state with meditation. Just get quiet for 5 minutes before you start your day or at the end of the day and just go, okay, this is what I know is going to make me feel top of my game.
Yeah.
And then just execute. And yeah. I know it's a lot easier said than done. Everyone like work. I'm yes, it is. It's work. Yet there's so much reward and joy that's on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm. And I think what really helped me too is being able to combine meditation with something that you would already be doing during the day, like brushing your teeth, just being mindful of how many times you're brushing back and forth, or eating, how many times you chew. And that just gets you out of your head and into the moment. And that's something that was so big for me, was just saying, I am here. This is what I'm doing. The present is the most important, not the past, not the future. And so that's what would help me is just doing something, being mindful on something that I already would do. Yeah. And because sometimes when I meditate, of course, sitting in silence freaks everybody out. So a good beginner meditation would be just doing something with mindfulness and with intention.
That was my very first podcast episode, was one thing to incorporate that has fundamentally changed my life is every morning in the shower, regardless of how late I'm running or how tired I am, or if there's no hot water, I have to list out 10 things that I'm grateful for, regardless, because I shower every day. And yeah. It's exactly as you said, like just like habit build. You're showering, may as well just, okay, I'm in here, take 2 minutes to list out things that I'm thankful for. And now, like, what is stemmed from that is absolutely insane. Like, yeah. I have fallen into the trap before of trying to set these Titan-sized goals. You know, we all have that on New Year's Day. I'm going to the gym for 3 hours. I'm going to train 6 days a week. I'm cutting out all carbs. I'm going to do this. Versus what if it's just, you know what? I'm going to get up 5 minutes earlier than I normally do to stretch. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's so, like, that's not attractive. That's not a, like, this sounds weird, but one of my favorite concepts that Dr. Jordan Peterson talks about is set the bar lower. Lower your standards for yourself, because that doesn't mean that your worth depreciates with your standards. That just means that you might be aiming too high. Just aim at something. Aim a little bit lower. Hit something. At least you're shooting versus having set up 12 targets downrange and then never actually shooting at any of them because you're paralyzed and you don't know what to do.
Oh my gosh, yes. And that's something that I'm still working on as well, because I grew up as a perfectionist, and it's not easy to not be an all or nothing thinker. Yeah. And that's just how society has wired our brains, is we have to be either perfect and doing everything perfectly and at the top of our game, or you're this lazy bum who doesn't do anything with their lives. And so I think a big thing is that we need to switch the way of thinking. And especially I'm saying this for myself too, because if I'm not doing everything that I want to do, then I can notice that I'm being hard on myself. But I was a health and wellness major at University of Texas in Austin. And one of the things we learned about was habit forming and what's so important and how you're actually going to build a habit and how you're actually going to change your life. And it's by doing little steps at a time, very, very slowly.
Yep.
So whenever I get like that, I'm like, wait, Emily, you literally studied this. This is multiple studies have been done on this. You just need to take little actions every day and be kind to yourself. Practice, you know, loving kindness, and just be proud of yourself for the little things you've done, because eventually if you're consistent enough, then it'll be something amazing in a year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, one of the reasons I enjoyed doing this podcast is a way to publicly hold myself accountable, because I struggle with all of these things. I'm by no means an expert. And if I ever say that I'm an expert, everyone listening, please stop listening to me. I've gone off the deep end. I'm an egomaniac if I say that I've perfected anything. So one other thing, I love the concept and the topic of vulnerability. And you were talking about, I think, and when you're talking about professional accomplishments, you use the word vulnerability three separate times. And that's a word that a lot of people are scared of. They don't really understand what vulnerability is. It's perceived as a weakness. So I'm curious for you, how have you used vulnerability as a strength? And why is it important to view vulnerability as something positive versus something negative?
Yeah, for me, vulnerability means courage, I think. And being brave and being fearless is a big characteristic for me that I always want to have. And so I think being vulnerable, whenever I see somebody being vulnerable, it really makes me admire them, and it makes me feel like I can connect with them. And it's what we talked about before. It's all about connection, is how you can heal. And so when I would see somebody be vulnerable and just share something that is hard to share, it would make me want to do the same thing, because they helped me and I want to pay it forward too. And so that's why I think being vulnerable is so important in life, is because it kind of takes you out of your head of maybe if somebody's vulnerable with you, it gets you out of your head of the things that you think that you're doing wrong or the things that you're mad at yourself about. And then you see somebody else, oh, she was struggling too. Oh, okay. Well, that gets me out of my head. Maybe I can do something about it also. Mm. And so I think that's just something that's always been really important to me, to be able to be open, honest, and not ashamed, and be proud of my struggles.
Yeah.
Because I know that I've seen somebody before who is proud of their struggles and they've overcome it and they've done something even greater.
Yeah.
So that's why it's very important for me to do the same.
I couldn't agree more. And you said you listened to my podcast talking about relationships, so you know how big of a fan I am of vulnerability. So hearing you share that is so, like, I love that. I love when people view vulnerability the same way I do. It's just confirmation, just solidifying, okay, yeah, vulnerability is a good thing. And that just reminded me, there was a study that they did on the law of reciprocity. And what they were thinking is, you know, if you do something nice for someone else, that it'll make them feel good. They'll make them more attracted to you. You know, hey, can you wash my coat? They go to the bathroom, come back. They like you more. Mm-hmm. When in fact, what actually happened is they found that when you do something nice for someone else, you like them more. So with vulnerability, the exact same thing, where if you're vulnerable with someone else, mm-hmm. they like you more and you like them more. It's just like this total, this doesn't make logical sense. Exactly. Like, wait, me being vulnerable with you makes you like me more. It's crazy. You wouldn't expect that. And yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course. I that's such a cool thing to think about. And I think especially for young people, it's hard, really, really hard for us because we're still figuring out how we want to act in the world. And there's still some obstacles that we haven't been able to face yet or haven't experienced where it would be easier to be vulnerable. So I think it's even more important for young people to practice being vulnerable and practice being open about their struggles, because there's a lot of fakeness in the world and there's a lot of shallow things that we see. And if we can combat that with vulnerability and openness, then we can do something about that insecurity that you can get from seeing all of those things on social media and the world and society.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. Emily, I want to talk with you about your next business ventures that you're getting started with. I know you have some pretty cool things going on with the self-help chef and some other restaurant stuff in the mix. So I would love for you to share with us, what are you working on now? What are you excited about?
I'm very, very excited for the future. A lot of things are happening. So we filmed our first season of The Self-Help Chef, and it's already on YouTube. So it's a combination of everything we talked about, which is plant-based eating and cooking and mental, physical, and spiritual health and wellness. And it's, like I said before, is something that I've always combined. And so I wanted to show the world that it is something that they should combine as well. And so we talk about experts in their field. We talk with experts in their field about different things like meditation, mindful movement, intuitive eating. And then we also cook some pretty awesome plant-based food. So it's really, really fun. And we're about to film our second season and we have exciting guests.
Yes.
So I'm very, very excited. And that should come out sometime early 2022. So I'm pumped for that. And then also we are opening a plant-based barbecue concept in New York City. So that is the thing that I'm very, very
so cool. About. So cool. I remember seeing that on Instagram. I went, plant-based barbecue? What the hell? And then I was like, that is the coolest thing. So yeah, where did that idea come from? How did you get involved with that? Like, share more about that. Brag a little bit.
I got a message from a lady on Instagram. All of these things happen with social media.
Yep.
Social media is a good thing and a bad thing. And so I get this message from this lady who saw me on an article for Health Kitchen, and she just liked the plant-based vibe and also everything we talked about of positivity, community, and that's something that she wants to put in her restaurant. She's had this idea. Her name is Carrie Fitzmaurice. She's had this idea for plant-based barbecue and has been working towards it for 3 years. And so she's been working really hard, and she was about to open a location and then COVID happened. And so of course everybody had to pivot. And so she ended up selling barbecue sauces that you can get online right now. It's called Pure Grit. And that's what we're doing right now. But we've been working together, and this was kind of a very vulnerable thing that we did, but she asked me if I wanted to hop on a plane, go do a pop-up with her in New York. And so the rest is history, because the pop-up went really well, and we're trying to open a brick and mortar location now. And it's just all about barbecue for everyone. And so you don't have to be vegan to eat it. You don't have to be, you know, a carnivore to eat it. Everybody can eat it. And it's really delicious and relaxed and community-based. And the food's really, really good.
I love that. What excites you most about what you're working on right now?
I think the community aspect of it all. Just being able to connect with others, with our experiences. And I remember for our first pop-up we did for Pure Grit, the things that we were most excited about was not the money or not getting, you know, a profit from it, but it was the different people who came in to try our food. And I remember at the end of the day, we would talk about, oh my God, did you see those people who came in? And I remember there was a couple of friends who were deaf, and they taught us sign language, and we just had all of these amazing connections. And that's what food is. It's such a connector for just happiness and love and community. And so that's what I'm very excited for with Pure Grit and also with the Self-Help Chef.
I think especially after the last year and a half, 2 years that a lot of people have had, that like loneliness is at an all-time high. Like that's an epidemic. People don't feel connected to themselves, to their family, to their community. And to be able to do something that is so community focused, I'm sure just from an energetic standpoint of you putting out that insane positive, this is what we're about. We're not focused on the money. We're not focused on the marketing, the advertising. We just want to bring people together. I think that approach sounds like it's doing wonders for you and is exactly what the world needs more of. So thank you on behalf of just the collective good and the collective consciousness for doing something that actually matters. You're not focused on making $1 billion working for a corporation selling shitty food to people that makes them unhealthy and promotes addictive tendencies. You're going, no, let's combine health in physical, spiritual, mental, emotional. Let's tie it all in together and let's share that as a community. So on behalf of everyone, thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having this podcast and being able to spread all of these awesome messages with all of the other guests you've had. And I think that's just as important. So
thank you. All right, Emily, I just have a few more questions for you. And two of them are pretty open. And then one of them is going to be a rapid fire kind of question.
Okay.
So the first one, what is something that you wish more people asked you about?
I think I wish more people asked me about body positivity and my passion for that and for self-love. A lot of people ask me about plant-based eating and cooking, and that's my job and that's what I love.
Yeah.
But I also am very, very passionate about talking about the things that we need to work on as a community. Yeah. With body image and how we view ourselves and how we view other people in the world. And that's something that I would love to talk about more. So if anybody has any questions,
yeah, that's
definitely something that I'm also just as passionate about.
I love that. Well, that may potentially tie in beautifully to my next question, which was there anything on the podcast that we didn't cover today that you wanted to expand on? You know, I was going to just give you the floor for a few minutes. If there was anything you wanted to share with me, with my audience, with yourself, you know, watching you go on that tangent, quote unquote, a little earlier, seems like you were able to learn from that of like, oh, I'm most proud of my kindness. So I wanted to give you the opportunity for just a few minutes, if there was anything that we didn't cover that you feel called and led to share with us today.
You know, you're really great at asking the right questions and
thank you.
Helping me open up and say everything I wanted to say. And also, you're very observant and really great at, you're a very good interviewer. So I want to point that out. So I feel like I've gotten everything out there. It's just I'm very thankful to be able to talk on all of these things that I'm passionate about and be able to talk with you and share stories and be given this opportunity. And so I also love to do the same thing on my Instagram. So I want to be able to cultivate that community in a healthy way. So if people want to follow me on Instagram and we can talk about body positivity and plant-based eating, there are going to be a couple things that we're going to be doing that's just going to get people to interact with each other and just grow a community. And I think that's another really important thing to do is in my career, is that I want to be able to do that through social media as well. Because I remember when I was struggling, I was following the wrong people. And so I think if we all follow people that have our like-mindedness, then it's going to be an amazing social media world as well. So that's something that I'm also very excited about.
Awesome. All right, this question just came to me and it's totally off topic of anything we've been saying. I'm curious. So going back to Hell's Kitchen, mm-hmm. What was a typical day like? Because, you know, you mentioned the movie magic that the lens and the filters they put on it. So I'm just curious, can you walk us through, you know, 60 to 90 seconds? What was a typical day on Hell's Kitchen like?
So you would wake up around 6 a.m. and in our dorms, they don't really turn off the lights because they want to film you. And so there's always a little bit of light, and you know how annoying that is. I don't know if people like night lights, then that's their thing. But me, I need darkness.
Yep.
So that you didn't really get your sleep. And then you wake up and you'll go have your individual or group challenge. So there's always a challenge at the beginning of the day. And so it could be outdoors or indoors, individual with a group. And the winner would get a reward. The loser would get a punishment. And in between all of that is confessionals. So when you're in a room by yourself talking about what just happened.
Gotcha. So, okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of those. And so I can't really talk too much about that, but it's a lot. So if you're not cooking, then you're talking about cooking. if you're not working, then you're talking about it. And it's I think it's physically draining, but it's very, very emotionally draining. And, then after that, we would do our punishment or reward or whatever. And then we'd have about an hour to get ready for dinner service. And that was the big one. And so dinner service would last about 90 minutes and we'd serve about 80 people. So that's a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize it was only 90 minutes and it was that many people. Holy cow.
I could be totally wrong because you lose track of time in there, but it's definitely not as long as a regular dinner service would be, which is like 6 to 7 hours.
Yeah.
And so it was very intense. And then after that, more confessionals. And then we'd probably go to bed around 1 and then do it all again. So intense. It was definitely they say it's a boot camp because it definitely is. And it was fun. It was fun in a sense that we got to do it as a team. Yep. And so we got really, really close after that. So it was very, very intense, but also very rewarding.
During, you know, functioning on just pure exhaustion, very little sleep because you have the stupid lights. I totally know how that feels. Like, that's the worst. What did you cling to, or how did you maintain your own sanity in an environment that is almost designed to break you down, you know, in a boot camp sort of way? It really tests your grit and your ability to push through. How did you maintain a sense of inner peace during all of that chaos?
Yeah, I would meditate a lot. So I would go off on my own and sit down, especially there are a couple times where I had to do a Cook for My Life. And so before that, I would just get in a good mindset and I would meditate and I would think about that this is a once in a lifetime experience and just to give it your all. And so that's what kept me going. I would journal about my day.
Yes. And
so I would find, because they don't give us pens or paper. We have our little recipe book, but sometimes we would stay in a hotel one night. And so we wouldn't get anything with it. And so when we were by ourselves, I stuck a pencil and I got my boarding pass, and I still have it. And I would write the whole week down. After the week, we get to sleep at a hotel. And so I would write everything down. And just like you said, of finding the 10 things you're grateful for, I think that was a thing that I did to practice gratitude, because all of the things we did were so cool. Even if it's a punishment, you're like, I can't believe I got to do that. Got to clean the Eiffel Tower in Paris, Vegas, or whatever. So it's things like that is being able to done a lot and done something amazing every day is definitely what kept me going.
A quote that just came to mind when you said that was, how you view what you do is how you do what you do. And if you were viewing things as what an opportunity I have to clean this Eiffel Tower in Vegas, whereas most people are going, son of a bitch, I have to scrub this clean, blah, blah, blah. And you're going, what a cool opportunity. That's affecting how you're doing it. And you're more present, you're more mindful. And the just throughout this whole conversation, I feel you and I have so much in common and so much synergy of just like, we're the same person. Like we have the, like the same mindset. Yeah. This is great. I know, we're just channeling right here, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I think another thing that I remember now that you say that was when I went into it, I said, if Gordon Ramsay yells at me and screams in my face, then I know I've made it. And so
yes.
That was my mindset. And so they didn't show it, but he told me to shut the F up one time. I don't know if I can cuss on your podcast.
No, yeah, please do.
Okay, he told me to shut the fuck up once. Yes. during dinner service when I was on the steak. And he just kept on coming back and screaming at me for no reason. And I was holding back tears that time. I think he was just trying to test me.
Okay.
But I was holding back tears at the moment. But then after that, I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I wanted. He's
like, he yelled at me. Gordon Ramsay just told me to shut the fuck up. My life is complete.
Exactly. I mean, he could have, I wish he'd told me that I was an idiot sandwich, but shut the fuck up was almost as good. Almost there.
Or yes, what one thing that does surprise me is the level that he can insult people. It's unrivaled, you know, calling people donkeys, like you stupid donkey or you idiot thing. That's amazing.
Because he's British. The Brits are so good at insults.
They're so witty.
I'm a quarter British, so I know.
You're like, I was waiting for you to just dig into me and insult me on something.
never.
Cool. All right, Emily, I have one more question. It's a series of three questions, rapid fire. But before that, where can we go to get connected with you further, stay updated on what you're doing, support you, encourage you, reach out to you? Where can we go to find you?
Yes. So you can follow me on Chef Emily Hirsch on Instagram. And it's Chef_Emily_Hirsch. And then YouTube, my YouTube series is called The Self-Help Chef. And you can find me through that, or chefemilyhirsch.com is my website. So you can reach out to me on any of those platforms. And I pretty much always respond. So unless you're being creepy. So don't be creepy.
Okay, that's just a good rule of thumb, people. Don't be creepy. Don't be a weirdo.
Don't be a weirdo. And I love responding to people. So so that's where you can find me. And I think that is all the platforms. Facebook, of course.
Yep.
But if you want to reach out to me, I would say the best would be Instagram or my website.
Cool. I'll link all of that in the show notes so we can get plugged in with you super easily. Okay. So I'm going to ask three questions, and I want you to just the first in one word or one sentence, just whatever first comes to your mind, want you to share it.
I'm ready.
All right. What's more important in order to succeed, a good attitude or good skills and experience?
Good attitude.
What is one of the most important traits someone needs in order to succeed?
Fearlessness.
What does happiness mean to you?
Balance and peace and connection.
So good. Love those answers. Couldn't agree more. Emily, this has been like a pleasure for me getting connected with you and learning more about your experience. And it was cool to not just see the Hell's Kitchen portrayal of you, but to actually see your heart and see your passions and your mindset. And I'm thankful that you and I were able to get connected and share your message with me and with my audience. So seriously, thank you for coming on the show. I've really enjoyed this.
Well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk with you. And I had a blast. So thank you so much for taking this time with me.
Of course. All right, everyone. That's it for today's episode. Please reach out to Emily if you have any questions, concerns, if you just need someone positive and smiley to interact with. She's seriously, we've just been smiling this entire time. It's been a blast. So if you've enjoyed this, please like, share, comment, subscribe, do all of the things that I know I mention at the end of every podcast, but it really does help and it would mean the world to me. So until next time, everyone, peace.